Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Az from FPL Black Box.
Well, Az, good to see you. Game week four is in the books. Plenty of chips being played by FPL managers this week. Just over 936,000 managers opting to play the wildcard this week, alongside nearly a quarter of a million free hit chips as well being activated. And for those that played them, I think it was a relatively successful game week. But before we dive into all the games, Az, did you play any chips this week? And how was your game week?
Yeah, I went into this week not very confident at all. I was on a hit down in the 6.6 million trenches. You know, I had a couple of Forest players away at Arsenal. I didn't think things were going to go too well. I ended up sort of in and around the average, which, you know, sometimes when you just look at your team, you just think, if I can just escape this with like a sort of a grey,
damage
small
limitation.
Green out,
yeah.
Damage limitation week, exactly. That was the aim this week, and I sort of got away with it. I bought Semenyo in for the hit, which
nice, good.
Basically the main reason why I managed to escape. If I hadn't done that and I'd kept Elanga, it would have been another sort of disastrous week. So yeah, got away with it. No chips played this week, no chips played this season. Hopefully, when I start activating them, I can shoot up the ranks and salvage something, because it's already looking a bit rubbish this year. How'd you get on?
Well, as we always say, it's early days, isn't it? It's early days. How many points did you get then? You were about the average. Average was 63, yes, across the game week. But
61, I think I got. So just
61.
Just under.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, not bad. Well, 62 for me. So the narrative is very much the same. I think in a week where there are a lot of FPL managers playing those chips, I went into it exactly the same as you. It was like, well, I'm not wildcarding, I'm not free hitting. And we will talk a little bit later on about when we might wildcard, because I can feel my trigger fingers getting itchy. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's a wildcard coming over the next couple of weeks, and it might be a certain Norwegian that is the catalyst for that. But 62 in a week where I didn't play a chip, I'm sort of okay with it. I had Semenyo. I bought him in last week, and you know, he's come good for me this week. I had the Salah penalty in the last minute again, which, quite incredibly, I haven't had a captaincy return from any of my four captains so far this season that's come before the 92nd minute.
Wow.
I've had so many late captaincy shouts this week, this season. It's been quite incredible. And another one from Salah this week. And then in my defence, I had Porro and Munoz, and I had some, you know, some all right returns there. The Munoz five-pointer feels okay, but then all those around him that are cheaper than Munoz at Crystal Palace are doing better than him. And ditto for Porro, right? Because Romero and Van de Ven both, yep, doing well. In a week where Porro gets a clean sheet, you can't complain with the 6 points, but maybe you can when his colleagues are getting more points for less FPL pounds. So yeah, with João Pedro on top of that, 62 points. So not too bad. It's not too bad. Let's crack on with some analysis of game week four then, Az. And let's start with Arsenal versus Nottingham Forest, the lunchtime kickoff on the Saturday. Before we get into Arsenal, because I do want to touch on those guys, of course, we've got to give a shout out to Elliot Anderson owners, haven't we? 3 weeks in a row where they were 1 point away, one CBIT contribution away from the defensive contribution bonus points. But this was the week. This was the week where he got the DEFCON bonus points. So Elliot Anderson owners, if you played him, because away at Arsenal, you'd be forgiven for not. But if you played him, he finally picked up the DEFCON bonus. But what do you make of Arsenal? 3-4 now for Jokeres, Eze with his home debut, Madueke looking good. It's clicking for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I read as well that Anderson got 11 DEFCON on the England for the England game as well. So it was actually four in a row before he finally gets it. So yeah, well done to anyone had him. I had Gibbs White in this one, who had a really poor shot and did nothing else. So for a much cheaper price, Anderson looks a great pick, taking those set pieces and things like that. Yeah, I mean, Arsenal have been great. I mean, just one goal conceded in four games, and that was that amazing free kick, which I'm sure you remember from Szoboszlai. They're the second best team statistically. We're going to talk about Arsenal in a bit in terms of XG conceded. But I mean, their games have been tough. You know, Manchester United, tough, maybe a bit arguable, but you know, still a big fixture. You know, Forest are playing Liverpool as well. So they've done it in tough games. And, you know, from game week six, the fixtures are really, really nice for them. So you talk about chips and what we're going to be doing in the future. I think as well as the big Norwegian up top, it's going to be going quite hard on Arsenal, because they've got some good players, you know, FPL-wise. Obviously some great players football-wise as well. But Madueke, I thought, was fantastic, you know, coming in for Saka in that match. You know, Jules won. He was top, most chances created, accurate crosses, dribbles. So he was just constantly getting the ball direct, making things happen. Was impressive. Eze as well, you know, really smart pass to pick up Gyökeres too. You can't really go wrong with any defenders that you pick. Timber looks great, two centre-backs. And then, yeah, and then Jokeres up front as well, who I think is going to be in most teams. So it's annoying that a lot of us didn't go for them quite early on because they've already picked up quite a few points that we've missed out on. That's probably the reason why you and I maybe aren't doing so well in the ranks. They're the team that's killing us week after week.
Well, I think well, it's certainly one of the reasons from my perspective. But you look at the fixtures in game week one and you go, as you say, a difficult start to the season. But for sure, it's, you know, game week seven in particular. I mean, I'm thinking about a wild card over the next couple of weeks. And because of that, they will definitely feature. But from game week seven onwards in particular, the fixtures look incredible. And you mentioned Madueke there, as well as all the stats that you reeled off there. Yes, he was top for all sorts of metrics, but 13 penalty box touches as well, which is the second highest across all players in the game week, across the whole game. I noticed Arteta come out with a couple of, you know, I read a lot into what the managers say post-match, right? And I kind of listen to what they got to say. And he talked about him being physically a different specimen and he's always willing to learn. That's what he likes about him. And I get the feeling he's already a bit of an Arteta favourite, Madueke, but the problem we've got, I guess, or the problem I've got as a wild card over the next couple of weeks is, well, if Saka comes back, and you've got to expect that he's going to come back and straight into the team, obviously, it's Bukayo Saka, that's his position. He plays on the right wing. So does Arteta move Madueke around to accommodate them both, or does Saka just come back in and Madueke goes to the bench? What do you think? And to that end, if you're on wild card next couple of weeks and notice I'm already getting into the selfish, I'm going to ask you a few questions about what would happen if you'd wild card next couple of weeks. I'm definitely thinking about it. Eze on the other side for, you know, a very reasonable price in FPL looks just as good, right? Looks just as good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one with Arteta because, you know, he does this thing that we don't have subs. We have, what do you call them, impactors or something like that.
Yeah, and that was it, yeah.
And I think he's bought in Madueke to rotate around with Eze. And Saka obviously doesn't think Wanneri is quite ready to be starting regularly. And I think he's realised that, you know, he needs to take a bit of pressure off Saka on the right wing. So you would say the strongest Arsenal team doesn't feature Madueke. I'd say Eze on the left and Saka on the right, and then the three in midfield. But that doesn't mean that Madueke isn't going to see a number of starts. But it does make picking an Arsenal mid trickier, because I think you are going to see early subs. You are going to see players, you know, missing out in games. So it's just whether you're happy with that. I think I prefer Eze on the left.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I think when Saka's back, he's going to take the majority of minutes. And that is Madueke's natural position. So even when he comes in, you know, on the left, you know, you would argue that he'd be more effective coming in on the right. But I think that's maybe less likely when Saka's fit. But it's going to be a bit of a lottery. You could decide not to gamble with it at all and go for someone else who's a bit more nailed. But I do like picking one of those mids from seven, like you said.
Yeah, I do too. And like you say, I'm not sure where to go yet. Maybe that game against City in game week five is a good week to scout both the teams, but in particular, who plays for Arsenal. So lots of new faces at Arsenal for us to consider. Also lots of new faces at Newcastle, not least Walter Mardé up front, who's, I don't think he could have hoped for a better debut, to be honest with you. I mean, Wolves were pretty obliging, I think we have to say. But Walter Mardé had three efforts in all, two of them headers and all of them in the box. So clear to see where he likes to do his best work. And with some of the news coming out before the game about Visser's injury, it does look, at least in the short term, as if Newcastle and Eddie Howe are going to be reliant. They're going to be looking for Walter Mardé to kind of be the clinical, you know, the guy that gets the goals for them up top. So yeah, Wolves second bottom for XGC across the season so far. They're 20th for XG, actually, at the other end of the pitch. So both ends of the pitch, they're struggling. But for XGC, yes, they are conceding lots of chances. But Walter Mardé still had to score, still had to put the ball in the back of the net, and he did so, right? And had plenty of other efforts outside of that. So Newcastle versus Wolves, what were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, he looks a great player, and I've made that mistake of watching his highlight reels and comparing him to some the tall, languid centre forwards that we've enjoyed so much, like the, you know, the Berbatovs and that like. He's, he didn't have many touches. 20 was the lowest of all Newcastle starters, but you can just see whatever he does, he sort of glides around the pitch, he makes things happen, he's very classy on the ball. And I mean, he's so tall, isn't he? And so strong in the air that, you know, good. I mean, they've got so many players that can cross the ball. I mean, when Langer comes back in, he's a great crosser. They've got Trippier as well. So he's going to get chances and he's going to be aerially dominant, you would have thought, because it's going to be so hard for defenders to deal with his presence. It's just Visser coming back. I just wonder how he's going to fit. I mean, they paid a lot of money for him. And I just wonder how he's going to, how it's going to fit both of them into the side.
Very different players as well, aren't they?
Very.
It's like they play together. And if they don't, then maybe Howe's looking at it from a, you know, what sort of a position are we playing depends on who I'm going to pick up front. It's a difficult one.
Yeah, I mean, Valtteri could go back and he could play in a sort of a 10 role and sort of make things happen from that role with Vissapang just off him. I mean, there's options. You know, they've got a lot of games to play this season, so it's great for them, but it's not great for FPL because we don't know where he's going to start. But I was really impressed. I really like him. I don't think you're going to be buying him now. The fixtures aren't amazing for the next few weeks, so I think we can hold off and wait and see. But yeah, certainly of all the German players we've had come over from the Bundesliga, I think he's probably started one of the best, right? Getting a goal, better than some of the other ones we've had.
He's looking good. Yeah, he's looking good. And I reeled out a couple of stats there for Wolves. I think those stats are the only thing that we need to talk about when it comes to Wolves, right? Second bottom for XGC, as I mentioned, 20th for XG, not keeping clean sheets, not scoring goals. I thought the body language was a bit off in the Newcastle game as well. And I didn't much like Vitor Pereira's post-match comments. It was a bit spiky, wasn't he? So he's feeling the pressure a little bit. So I think a team to target, right?
Yeah, I mean, lost their two best players. You know, we keep saying it, but losing Aitnori and Cunha is a massive blow. Obviously, replace them. You need those players to come in, but they're not at the level, I think it's fair to say, those two, because they are elite players. And then you get all those rumours with Strand Larsen, you know, going to Newcastle.
They need him back, don't they?
And then he gets an injury as well, and it's not been a great pre-season or start for them. And like you said, I think they had spells where they looked all right, where, you know, that makes it look like something's going to happen, but then it's got no one at the other end to actually put the ball in the net. So even if they create chances, it's like, who's actually going to score for them? So yeah, they need Strand Larsen back as soon as possible. I mean, if he was to get a more serious injury or be that, they would be in big trouble. So they're definitely one of the teams to target.
Yeah, agree. Let's move it on to Brentford versus Chelsea then. Good performance by Brentford, I thought, actually, in this game. And when I saw the Chelsea team sheet come out, there was a lot of tinkering there from Maresca, wasn't there? And of course, we know that Chelsea and others are going to have a hectic schedule over the next few weeks with European football. There's some League Cup action as well, isn't there? But Cucurella benched, I think, for his owners. I don't think they were expecting that. Although what I will say is when he did come on, he more or less just camped out in the box, didn't he? He just was just forward so often. It was crazy. But Maresca tinkering a little bit with his team, maybe that is a sign of things to come for Chelsea. Maybe their lineup starts to get a little bit less predictable. But Cole Palmer back with a bang, sold by 1.4 million managers, including me, and benched by 760,000 more. That was only his second goal in 18 Premier League games, wow, by the way. His first from open play since January. But in that game, could have had more than one. He had 5 shots, which was most in the game. And bear in mind, he only come on the 56th minute. Kelleher, I think in particular, with a decent save when, I think in the second half, where Palmer was already off celebrating, I think, but Kelleher managed to save it out of nowhere. So Palmer back with the bang. Is he back on your radar? Is he a player that we're going to go back to? Or I don't know, did you keep him or sell him in the first instance?
No, I sold him when he picked up the injury. It's a lot of money, isn't it? And you don't really know how long it's going to be. And it's the kind of player you can keep on your bench for ages and then, you know, you end up not knowing what's happened. I mean, it was good that he was back. And I think the real winners are those who kept him maybe free-hitted this week. And then they get him back in for next week. Because, yeah, it's a decent run. You know, Manchester United next, then it's Brighton. Okay, then it's Liverpool, but then you've got Forest, Sunderland, Spurs, Wolves, Burnley.
It's not bad, is it?
No, it's been a good start, you know, fixture-wise for Chelsea. And they've obviously done well in the league. But you can see that continuing, really. It's some really good fixtures. So, and he's become a bit of a differential now, 19% ownership. I guess it's just tough, isn't it? I mean, Haaland has been so strong, and then looking at other players around. I mean, I guess the good thing is that with Salah, who we're talking about in a bit, maybe dropping a little bit, maybe that opens the door for Palmer to come in as the second premium if you're going for Haaland up top. I think particularly against Brighton in game week 6, that looks really good. We know what we did at home to us, being a Brighton fan last season.
Still got the scars from that, haven't you?
Still got the scars. Didn't even own him for that match. So yeah, you've got to say, you've got to be impressed when he came on. It comes on the 56th minute and 5 shots. You know, nearly scores again towards the end. Scores the goal. Looked really, really sharp and lively. So you'd expect him straight back in the team. And I think he's a great pick, but yeah, I guess with Manchester United away and Liverpool next, I don't know. Would you be using transfers to bring him in? Yeah, maybe 2 transfers if you haven't got the money banked. I'm not too sure. What's your plan? Are you thinking of getting him back or waiting a bit?
Well, I'm going to hold off for now, I think. I'm going to wait to see whether he's back to the Cole of old. And when I say the Cole of old, I don't really mean back end of last season. I mean start of last season, season before, right? I don't really want the Cole Palmer that was from January onwards last season because, you know, only got 1 goal and that was from the spot, if I remember rightly. So I'd like to see him against Manchester United next week. And then when I wild card in six, which is currently the plan, then I'll make my decision. I think I have with Chelsea, but given with everything we just said about the Maresca tinkering and the fact they've got a busy schedule, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to keep João Pedro, right? I've got no intent on selling João Pedro. Five returns in four game weeks for João Pedro, including this game where I certainly wasn't his best game at the weekend, João Pedro. And I think even he, before the game, came out and said, or the manager said, you know, João Pedro not 100% fit, maybe. He's been travelling a lot with Brazil. Maybe it's right that I don't start him. Well, Maresca was like, no, we need you. You've got to play. And he had one shot versus Brentford, yeah, but still manages to pick up an assist, a fairly fortuitous assist, if you don't mind me saying as well, because it kind of got deflected off of his shoulder, didn't it?
0.02 expected assist for
that. Is that what that was? Well, yep. I knew you'd have the stat. But despite all of that, as two bonus points, right? So as João Pedro owners, we're sitting here, I'm sitting here with the seven and going 7-pointer this week. I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it in a game where he didn't really look that great. But for me, that tells you a lot about his game, tells you a lot about the work that he's doing off the ball, tells you a lot about his pass completion rate. The fact that he can get two bonus in a game where there's four goals and he's involved in only one of them, and it was a low XA assist. This is an FPO asset that we like, right? You know, getting bonus points when we're not expecting it. I'm going to be keeping him on wildcard for sure.
We do like it, but I mean, you've got to say he's very lucky to have come away with that. I mean, the
BPS. We like lucky FPL assets, as we'll take them.
Well, this is it. There is a thing with, you know, we look at all these stats and we look at all these things, but sometimes players just have something about them where they just manage to pick up points and pick up things, and it all just falls for them. We've seen that, you know, year after year, and it's something that's hard to account for and plan for, but it does happen, and it's definitely happening for him early in the season. I mean, the bonus point system, I mean, he only got 25 overall. I mean, to put that into context, I mean, you'd expect two or three bonus or maybe like a 30, 31. Like, yes, it's quite rare for a player to be getting bonus down in 25. So I think it tells you that a lot of other players on the pitch weren't hitting the threshold to get those. And like you know, like we said, very fortuitous to get the assist. But absolutely, you take it. And I think if you haven't got him, you know, I would be looking to prioritise him over Palmer, I think, because I think it's 7.7 million.
It's value, you know, isn't it? It's good value.
It's great value. And, you know, he's a lock in my team until, you know, maybe rotation kicks in or something happens. But at the moment, such an important player, you know, for them, especially with Delap's injury as well. They don't seem to really know what to do up front. You know, they recall Gyu, but then I don't even think he was in the squad, was he?
No, and not in the squad, no.
George came on against Fulham, but then, you know, didn't play in this one. It's all a bit of a lottery as to who starts up front, but you know the constant there is going to be Pedro. So if a few people were put off because they're a bit worried about the rotation, all the players they've got, I think that's been alleviated now. So yeah, easy buy for me if you haven't got him already.
Yeah, totally. And before we move on to West Ham versus Spurs, as a Liverpool fan, I've got to give Jordan Henderson a shout out for that assist, haven't I? I was rolling back the years, Jordan. Absolutely loved that assist for Sharda's goal. And Sharda actually found himself a lot more central in that game, I noticed, racking up four shots. So that was more than the rest of the Brentford team combined. So definitely a focal point. And the way that Henderson got his head up to look for him immediately, I noticed that a lot in the game. You know, sometimes the stats don't always tell you all the story, but you watch the game, they're always looking for Sharda. They were always looking for him. I'm not about to go out and buy him in FPL, but just one to keep an eye on, I think, Sharda. And the fact that Henderson and others were always looking for him was kind of key. But West Ham versus Spurs, and let's move it on to that one. Great, talk about great goals. Great goal from Bergvall, wasn't it? God, blimey, what a header. First goal for him. I was going to say this season, but I think that might be his first Premier League goal ever for Lucas Bergvall. So yeah, fair play to him. Yeah. What was your opinion here, though? Because for every bit that Spurs were good, and I thought they were very good from set pieces, we've got to talk about that in just a second, particularly with Xavi Simons now adding quality to the corners. Not that Pedro Porro or Kudos or anybody else takes a poor corner, but certainly Xavi Simons is, you know, the creativity and the way that he can hit a corner was sensational. Or was it just West Ham looking really out of sorts? I mean, some of us, I mean, me included, kind of thought, well, are they back a little bit after that win against Forest? And I was, you know, very happy to get a clean sheet out of that one from Diouf off my bench, which was very unexpected in game week three. But then I benched him again in game week four because I feel like that was maybe a bit of a Forest blip in game week three, and actually Nuno got sacked off the back of it. So maybe I was right. West Ham, for everything that we mentioned about Forest earlier against Arsenal, the body language and, or was it Wolves we were talking about? Wolves, wasn't it? The body language and stuff, the post-match comments weren't great from the manager. sort of feel the same about West Ham. But I take nothing away from Spurs because very good performance. And as a Pedro Porro owner, as I said at the top of the pod, getting six from him this week, I don't know. You've got to be happy with it.
But I'm not.
When Van der Ven's popping up and poaching a goal on the penalty spot, and you know, Romero getting a 12-pointer with an assist, and actually was unlucky not to get more because he had one ruled out for VAR, which in my opinion should have stood. I felt a bit deflated with my 6-pointer from Porro, right? But how do you feel about the game? How did it go for you?
Well, we're paying an extra million for Porro for, you know, set pieces and because we think he's the most attacking one. He's got the history. But really, when you look at when I watched the highlights, he wasn't making those driving runs that we've seen him make before. He's not like Munoz or some of the other more attacking fullbacks. And you look at Van der Ven's position, for example, and he's trying to burst into the box. And obviously, the corners are coming in. Same with Romero as well. So I think maybe not an error at the start because we only went with what was available. But I think if I was wildcarding now, I'd certainly drop down to one of those two.
Oh, I think you would. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When you see cheaper players in the same team scoring, it's always going to be a bit frustrating. I was also really frustrated because I went into the Forest West Ham game last week with three Forest players and then had to watch the West Ham masterclass at 85 minutes plus to ruin all my points, and then they put in a performance like this. I mean, they were all right for, you know, for 35 minutes.
Spurs?
Yeah, I thought they had.
I'll give you 10. I don't know about 30, 35. 10 or 15 minutes, they were all right.
They had a couple of spells where I thought they looked fairly threatening and looked like they're going to make something happen. Yeah. But then as soon as the goal went in, they just completely
fell apart, didn't they?
Yeah, and then obviously the red card. It's always hard to judge a team when a red card happens as well. But, you know, you expect to see maybe a bit of fight, a bit of unity when that happens. And it's like they just down tools completely. As soon as that red card happened, they just thought, oh, that's this game gone. And
there's something in that, Az. There's something in that, what you've just said there, in terms of a mentality. Because I know it's in the first half. So first halves of games so far this season, West Ham have conceded 2.3 XGC. So that's their XG conceded. And they've conceded three goals. And they were all against Chelsea, by the way. But in the second halves of games, the XGC is 3.18, so a little bit worse. But they've conceded eight goals. So what happens to them in second halves of games? I mean, the red card wouldn't have helped here against Spurs for sure, but Why are they collapsing in second halves like this? It's kind of mad, isn't it? And with Palace up next, you're holding your Matetas and your Munozes and players like this, aren't you?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I just think Potter hasn't got... Whether he hasn't got the players that he wants to do what he wants for his system, or whether they're just not reacting well to his tactics and what he wants to do, or whether Potter himself is... I still look at him and think he's not quite right after the Chelsea, fiasco that happened with him, and he's sort of come back, and the West Ham fans don't really seem to be on his side either. So when, you know, there's misplaced pass or something bad happens, the fans get on the team, and that is just never something you want, particularly when you're struggling. And, you know, you get into the second half of the game and there's boos and jeers and things like that. You know, these things do impact on players.
Totally.
And
yeah, totally.
It's a team divided, I think, at the moment. You know, despite that good win, you know, the fans, the players, the manager, there seems to be this disconnect between everyone. And I think, again, similar to Wolves, they're still the team to target, even though they can, you know, pull out a result like they did against Forest. I think that result flattered them, didn't it? I mean, it was 85 minutes, 0-0. Yeah. I still think if you're looking at players to captain or bring in, you still want to be targeting West Ham. Really poor. I feel for the fans. It's not been great.
Yeah, and three teams coming up next in Palace, Everton and Arsenal, where a lot of FPL managers already have or will have assets from those teams. So, yeah, get those FPL assets in your team if they're playing against West Ham. Anything else to say about Spurs? I feel like we've gone in a little bit there at West Ham and not really given Spurs enough credit because, yeah, very, very good from them. What do you think of Xabi Simons' debut? He came out in his post-match press conference and said, you know, couldn't really ask for anything better. And I agree with him. I thought he was really, really good. I mean, he'll have tougher tests than West Ham, no doubt. But good from him. What about Kudus, though? Because Kudus, I think, was probably the pick in game week one. A lot of FPL managers going there, but not really showing us what we want in terms of underlying stats for XGI, XG, you know, hugging the touchline a lot. He kind of came into the game a little bit more from an XG perspective in the last sort of 20, 25 minutes. I sort of got a sense that after the Souček red card in particular, he was like, I'd really like to get one over my old team here and get on the score sheet, and we're 3-0, so I'll take more risks, you know. But up until that point, I don't really see him getting into the positions that we want him to be in from an FPL perspective. So I can see a lot of FPL managers maybe thinking about moving Kudos, maybe to another Spurs asset, right? Maybe, but maybe moving him on. What do you think?
33% owned.
Highly owned.
So, yeah. You know, it's a highly owned player. Three blanks in a row. And you'd argue that one of the assists, at least, in the first game was lucky. I mean, Richarlison's, you know, bicycle kick was
yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Was you know, it's hard to get, you know, any better than that. So, Kudus is a frustrating FPL asset. I think he always has been. I mean, he had a great first season. He got sort of 17 attacking returns, but last year, really, really disappointing with him. And, you know, he's playing in a good team and he'll get chances, but I think Simmons is the one you go for with those corners. As
just
well.
Looks class, you know, doesn't he? Clearly he gliding around the pitch at the weekend. I just thought, oh, he's a nice player. Nice player.
He's a great player because he's going to be just involved in everything that happens on the pitch.
And
that's the player you want. You know, Kudus has got this reputation of being a bit frustrating. You know, we'll blank a couple of games, we'll get a couple of returns in the next one. Whereas Simmons, I think, is just going to tick over and you can just leave him. I mean, they've got such a good run, you know, right the way down to game week 12. So just get him in and I'm sure he's going to do well. So yeah, really nice pick. And if you went there early, I think you've done really well. Just 2%.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely on radar for me. On wildcard, I would suggest Xavi Simons, definitely. Bournemouth versus Brighton then.
Let's do this one quickly.
Well,
come on.
We can't do it that quickly, mate, because, you know, I want to talk about who I consider to be probably the best pound-for-pound FPL asset in the game right now. Antoine Semenyo, 7.5 million. Now at the top of the FPL points table, well, after that 13-point haul on Saturday. I know you're not going to want to talk about it, but the listeners are going to want to hear about it. Antoine Semenyo, do you agree with me? Do you think he's sort of best pound for pound in the game right now? And, well, I was going to say potentially on penalties, and the only reason I use the word potentially is because Kluivert was benched, right? But Evan Nilsson was on the pitch at the same time, and Semenyo clearly has got the penalties over him. So it's, you know, that was a bit of a question mark in my head. They got the pen. I was like, oh, is it going to be Semenyo or Evan Nilsson? Well, it was Semenyo that got the call to take the penalty. Now, if Kluivert does come back into the team, which I think we're all expecting at some stage, maybe he takes the pens off him, or maybe Iraola's just said, no, Antoine, you're our man now. And I hope he has, right? I hope he has. And if he has, that just supercharges him as an asset, doesn't it? Even more value at 7.5.
Should have been a straight red for his awful push into the hoardings. You know,
it was a bit naughty. It was a bit naughty on Dick Alper, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it was a great performance. I bought in Semenyo because I thought he would terrorize us in that game. And actually, the points he got, this is what FPL is so weird with. I sort of got the call right, but it was a lucky assist and then a penalty that I wasn't expecting. So, you know, you think he's going to get some joy down the wing, and he did, but it didn't really yield. Didn't yield any returns. It was sort of those other areas where we got it.
I'm not having that lucky assist, by the way. I've heard this narrative from a few. So Sam, the other side of FPL family, didn't have him. Oh, lucky assist. Listen, he's bought that ball out of the air. He's beaten a man and then he's passed it along to Scott. I mean, great goal, right? But he's got to be there. He's got to get that ball under control. Yeah. It's not a lucky assist. Come on. We'll take that.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm being a bit too down on him. Maybe because it wasn't against Brian, right, maybe I'm saying it was great. Yeah, I mean, he is a great option. I mean, he's going up in price. You know, he seems to be going up, you know, more. I think he's had the most price rises of all players because of that big haul. I mean, he's top of the points like now. The thing is, I don't really see it stopping. I think Bournemouth are a really, really good team. Their pitch is horrible because I mentioned the advertising hoarding. It's so narrow. Like the way they play, and it means players like Semenyo can just cut in and cause so much damage. He can go wide. He can cut in. We've seen him in the past take so many shots as well. But you know, if they've decided that he's on penalties, they're obviously thinking, okay, maybe this is a slightly more clinical Semenyo than maybe we've seen in previous years. I would imagine Kluivert takes them back off him when he comes back. I mean, if you were to pick one, like to take it, I mean, we're not involved in all the training and practices and everything like that, but I still wouldn't put Semenyo in that clinical bracket. Whereas Kluivert, I mean, he scored, a hat-trick of penalties, was it last season?
Yeah.
Or was it two?
No, he got three, I think. Yeah.
If you're scoring a hat-trick of penalties in one game, you leave that player on penalties, surely. That's the way I see it. But I still think, even if he goes up to 8 million, he's the key man at Bournemouth now. Luke said it on Black Box, he's got main character syndrome.
Yeah, he's got that aura, hasn't he?
He's
totally.
He's got the aura. He's got the aura about him. And, you know, Newcastle, Leeds, Fulham.
Good fixtures.
It's a good run of games. And, you know, you wouldn't even back against him against Palace, Forest and City after that. So really, really good pick. I mean, he's 38% owned.
And like you say, at home as well, like you said, with the pitch and the stadium, it's Newcastle, Fulham and Forest, the next three home games. They look good, don't they? They look good. I think you've got to go for something.
Have you got him?
I didn't bring him in this week. I brought him in last week. I thought it was a little bit unlucky to come away with nothing out of that Spurs game, actually, because they did play very well, Bournemouth, in game week three. So to see him come back and get some returns in four was good. I did bring in another Bournemouth player, actually, this week. On the back of that, looking at that run and the fixtures they've got coming up, I brought in Senesi this week as well. Fourth successive week that he's got the defensive contributions, by the way. So not many players that are racking up the defensive contributions on the regular like he is, but him and I think Tarkowski, and maybe there's one or two others that haven't got a hand, but Senesi doing all the right things from a defensive contribution perspective. So in other seasons, he'd have got 1 point for me, but ends up with three, which is kind of a bit, you know, I'm not singing from the rooftops that he's got me 3 points, but still he's keeping the DEFCON bonus ticking over, right? Ticking over. And they did miss Diakite, I thought, a little bit at centre half, although the teenager, and I'm going to, forgive me for this one, Az, but Veljko Milosevic. I've got that so wrong.
Just say it really quickly. I'll try my best to say that really quickly.
Milosevic, I think it's something like that, right? But the teenager come in. I'll just call him the teenager. 4.5 in FPL, the centre-back teenager for Bournemouth. Did very, very well. Got two DEFCON as well as Senesi. But Senesi, I think he's probably the one to go for if you're going to pick a Bournemouth defender. Anything from Brighton catching your eye very quickly?
Oh, not really. I mean, it was just, it's a typical Brighton performance. We had large spells where we dominated and stupid mistakes cost us the game. I mean, Dunk's back pass for the goal was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, what can you say? We're not clinical in front of goal. We made too many mistakes. We'll win games you don't expect us to win. We won't win games you expect us to win. Our manager is a nightmare with injury news and things. Like, I love Brighton, but FPL-wise, you can make a real case just to avoid all of our players. We've got so many players in attacking positions as well. There's no one that really stands. I mean, Rutter would be the only one that I'd go anywhere near. I still think he's going to have a good season for us, but I think there's better options out elsewhere. So I think Brighton are sadly just an avoid for now.
Yeah, well, with that said, we will just move it on then, as I think, with Burnley versus Liverpool. 763,000 transfers in for Alexander Isak this week in FPL, only for him to not show up in the squad at all. And with Arne Slot saying that he probably needs a few weeks to get up to speed, to get match fit, etc., etc., I don't think we were expecting to see him start this game by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought we might see him come off the bench potentially. But Liverpool, listen, same as we mentioned with Chelsea, lots of games coming up in Europe and elsewhere, so we'll have plenty of time to get that game time. Very much kind of one-way traffic in this game, wasn't it? 2.45 XG for Liverpool, 27 shots, although only four of those were on target, by the way. So there was a lot of kind of long shot, kind of low XG chances that Burnley did very well to restrict Liverpool to. 55 touches in the opponent's box, 81% possession. But the stat that I want to pick out as a Liverpool fan, which was unusual for me, was 44 crosses for Liverpool. That's very unusual for Liverpool. We were forced wide a lot. And I have to give props to Burnley, really, because that's not where Liverpool want to be. We want to have the ball in central areas. We want McAllister and Wirtz doing good work in the central areas. But that's not where we want to be. We don't want to be wide. And Burnley forced the play wide a lot. Salah as well, noticeably subdued, no open play shots, just creating one chance as well against that very ultra defensive looking Burnley back line, but still pops up with the penalty in the last minute, as he tends to do from the Hannibal handball. What do you make of this game? Was it as one-sided as my narrative there has kind of played it out to be, and I'm a little bit bitter that we kind of was restricted just to one goal, or do we have to give Burnley some credit, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, there was a game plan to frustrate and to force you wide, and it worked really well. And I just think these 95th minute goal like penalties are just absolute sickeners. We saw it for Manchester United last week against Burnley as well, and then they suffered another one again this week. So no, I do feel for them. I mean, here's a stat for you. Mo Salah, over his last three games, excluding penalties, XG of 0.04.
I know. I know. Right?
There is something. Mm. There is something wrong with Salah at the moment in terms of getting, you know, getting chances and getting points. It is a miracle, really, as someone who's got Salah and not Haaland, that Salah's even in the same ballpark as Haaland points wise. Because when we come to talk about Haaland in a bit, I mean, Haaland is just like in a different. He's playing in about four divisions up when it comes to some of those expected metrics.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at some of the other players. I mean, look at Gakpo, five shots, taking corners. I mean, he looks good. You've got Ekotike as well, but I mean, which one of those do you go for with Isak Pedji coming into the team? I mean, what have you made of Wirtz? That's the big question I wanted to ask you, because I was disappointed again. Four chances created, none of them big, another blank. He forced a save from Dubravka, but otherwise he's not as sort of instrumental in things as I thought he would be.
No, and I think he probably is a sell in FPL. I think he's the reason I went for Gakpo over Wirtz in game week one was for exactly that, what we saw in the Community Shield and what we saw in pre-season. Listen, we could do a whole nother podcast about how I feel about Liverpool. I do feel like when Isak comes in, that will change things a little bit. I noticed Ekotike likes to drop a little bit from that number nine position into more of a 10. And he also likes to drift a bit left. Well, if you're going to drop a little bit and drift a little bit left, whose space are you going to be in? You're going to be in Wirtz's space. And I think it's getting a bit crowded there. Cody as well, I think he's being told to be quite wide and hug the touchline. But even he likes to cut in on that right foot and unleash shots. That's his kind of trademark. You know, that's what he likes to do. So I do think there's a lot of players in Wirtz's territory in the pitch where it's just getting too congested and he's not being allowed to do his best work. I think when Isak comes in, I think he'll hug the nine a bit more. He'll drop deep a little bit less. And I think that'll free up some space for Wirtz to do his best work. So
that could be weeks away, right? We don't know how long it's going to take.
It could be. So to answer your question, I think Wirtz is a sell in FPL. I do. I agree. But I do think if we were to predict where we might be in a couple of months from now, let's say, we might be thinking about Wirtz in a slightly different, there might be a slightly different narrative. I think he might come back into our thinking, but for now, yeah, he's probably a sell. But Salah though, what are you going to do with him, right? I could keep saying wild card next couple of weeks. I don't know what I'm going to do with him yet. I'm still really undecided.
Well, I'm selling him next week.
He's gone. You might say that.
Yeah. I mean, in Haaland this week, Arsenal away works out quite well because it means I haven't got to make a decision. But it's not enough. Like, he's been so lucky to get these points, and he was the biggest overperformer in terms of XG and goals scored last year. And you know, there was games where, you know, he's got that about him. Again, we talked about it earlier. He's got that bit about him where things just happen and things might fall for him. But for 14.5 million with the fixtures Liverpool have got and the other options they've got, and the fact Haaland's playing so well, I don't want both because I think that just makes your team too unbalanced.
Yeah.
Definite sell for me next week. And if I was wildcarding, I wouldn't be keeping him on the wildcard either.
Yeah, all right. Well, I can see a lot of FPL managers probably doing the same as you. And we should probably go straight there then. Let's go to Haaland as your Salah alternative then over the next couple of weeks. You're right in everything you've said, right? Non-penalty XG over the opening four game weeks. Get this, Haaland, 5.68 non-penalty XG. To put that into perspective, here are the top five players. So second is Ismail Assar with 2. Then it's Semenyo with 1.93 and Beto with 1.88. Haaland, 5.68. It's like well over double, nearly treble. I mean, that's a higher non-penalty XG than most clubs in the Premier League, right? He is in a different league right now and completely stole the show, didn't he, in the Manchester derby. And then you've got Pep in his post-match conferences saying things like, he's better than ever. He's looking better and fitter and more physical than we did in the treble season. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you look at the underlying stats, 5 shots in the box, 3 big chances against Manchester United. There was one chance that came off the inside of the post. That was a 0.89 XG. So as a Haaland non-owner, yes, him getting a brace hurt me, but I tell you what, it could have been so much worse. Could have been worse. And it was very uncomfortable watching him without him.
Well, this is it. He's got 5 goals, but actually I think he's had chances where you maybe think he's underperformed a little bit on it. He could have had 7 goals in 4 games and then it's looking really, really poor. And it's only, like I said, because Salah's had those, maybe, you know, that he got an assist in the last minute against Newcastle. He got that goal right at the end in the first game of the season against Bournemouth. He got the penalty right at the end. You know, Salah could be looking at fewer points and Haaland could be looking at way more. And then it's really bad for those who went Salah over Haaland. So he's just got to come in. You know, like I said, Arsenal next is as tough as it gets. But I mean, Burnley, then Brentford, you've got to own him from game week 6, I think.
Yeah,
and whether you're using transfers to get him in or whether you wildcard or whatever, you, you know, even the free hit in six isn't enough for me, because if I use that, I'm going to come back to a team without him and then I'm going to want him back. So it's got to be transfers to bring him in six or the wild card to make sure I've got him. Absolute must own.
Yeah, and I think Haaland is, you're right, I think Haaland's changing the way I'm thinking about my chip strategy. For sure, I had him earmarked as, I had the free hit chip earmarked for game week six for sure, because I got no City in my team. I'm like, Burnley at home, going to definitely want him for that. But you're right, I'm now not thinking about that. I'm now thinking about the wild card in six because I want him and others. I thought Tijani Reinders was unlucky for his owners not to get more in that game. Missed a pretty gilt-edged chance, which, by the way, would have been a Haaland assist if he'd scored that. So even more points for Haaland potentially. So yeah, we're going to want some City, aren't we, in six? And Haaland's going to be pretty key in that. I'm probably not going to go there in game week five. I think, you know, the Arsenal away, you know, one of the more difficult fixtures, if not the most difficult fixture that they've had so far this season. So yeah, from six, I definitely want him. Anything to talk about from a Manchester United perspective though here, Az? Because I noticed Mbeumo is now joint top for among all FPL midfielders for goal attempts this season with 12. So he was impressive to a degree in this game, but as a Bruno owner, I have to say I was a little bit disappointed. He only got one penalty box touch in the Manchester derby. Despite him moving a little bit further forward, I think Amorim kind of put him a bit more in that kind of 10 position, didn't he, in the final 30 minutes. But really disappointing to see nothing from Bruno. Anything from Manchester United to discuss, catching your eye?
Well, Mbeumo was the one that impressed me, and he's the one I'd pick. Yeah. I'm still bitter about Bruno's penalty last week. I don't think I'll get over that for the time being, but lucky he didn't get another one this week as a non-owner. The trouble with Mbeumo is he's kind of reversed what he was doing last year. He was one of the biggest, I think he was the biggest overperformer in terms of XGI last season, 5.48. This year, it's flipped completely the other way. He's down two, like, goal involvements, essentially, what maybe he should be. And I think this was a great, you know, a great week where we saw that, because he was the biggest underperformer of the week this week. He's shots over the bar, wayward shooting, wayward passing. Like, he's getting into all the right positions, doing all the right things, getting really direct, but he's lacking in that final third. I think we've seen, though, he's got the history now to know that this is probably not the norm, and he will go back to getting returns. So I still think if you're looking to invest in Man U, Mbeumo is the one that I'd go for. But I mean, let's be honest, they were poor again, weren't they? Like, it was a pretty routine win for Man City. They had a couple of moments, but I don't think anyone was really expecting City to lose that game at any point in that match. So Amorim's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think you're right, Az. I think you're right. Let's talk about the headlines then from the rest of the game. Sunderland, ninth for XGC overall, proving that they are no pushovers, the same as Leeds and Burnley. So Palace racking up 1.77 XG in that game, but 14 attempts, 8 in the box, but couldn't find a way past that Sunderland rear guard. So, like I say, no pushovers, and it's Watkins and Villa next up against Sunderland, who, you know, for the first time in their history now, Aston Villa, not scored a goal in their first four opening Premier League games. And I, for one, as a Watkins owner, well, let's just say he's on thin ice, right? My patience is wearing thin. And I think there are some FPL managers that have got him and Morgan Rogers. So the double up in the Villa attack is not looking on, is it? And with Sunderland up next, you'd say, well, the fixtures are there for Villa to turn it around. And do I keep Watkins given it's Sunderland up next? Well, I'm telling you, they're no pushovers, Sunderland, as I said before. So I don't know. Are you a Watkins owner? Have you got him? Or have you sold him already?
Yeah, I'm a Watkins owner. Yeah. And I was looking at the next two and thinking Sunderland and Fulham. That's a good decent run, but I've been impressed with Fulham as well. I mean, then it's Burnley, but I can't see myself holding him until seven at this rate. I think he's got Sunderland, and then that's it. Like, this is, it's got to be
last chance for him. How many? We say that every week, don't we? For Watkins,
we do. But if you've kept him for this long, I mean, surely you have to give him a promoted team. I mean, Palace and Everton was always going to be a test. I think we all hope that he gets something in it, but it was always going to be tough because they're two good defenses. If you've kept him for those two games, I think you give him Sunderland and then cash out. But do you know what? If you want to sell him, I don't blame you. I'm keeping him. One more week.
I feel like we're going to be saying that every week for Ollie Watkins. I think if Mr. Isak was fit and firing and ready to come into that Liverpool team, I think there'd be a few FPL managers that would be finding the million and a half that they need to go from Watkins up to Isak. But Everton, from their perspective, everything's going through Grealish, isn't it? Let's finish up on him. I think he's looked a constant threat. I mean, I noticed in the highlights when I was watching it on Match of the Day that they're always looking for him. Like, doesn't matter whether it's Dewsbury Hall that's got the ball, whoever in that Everton side, they're always looking to get the ball for Grealish because they know how creative he can be. And they wrapped up 2.17 XG in that game. And if it wasn't for Martinez, right, I thought Martinez was easily Villa's man of the match. There was, I think it was from Keane in the second, absolutely world-class save from Michael Keane in the second half. So, yeah, you know, Villa probably a little bit lucky and thankful, let's say, to Martinez to not lose this game. And Everton, yeah, a bit unlucky maybe to not win this game. Grealish, a constant threat. What do you think of him? Do you think he's worth the extra over like a Keane and Dewsbury Hall or somebody else in that Everton tie?
I think you're relying a lot on points in West Ham at home in game week six because it's Liverpool away next. It's Palace
true
at
enough.
Home in seven.
Yeah, true enough.
He can't play against City in eight. Spurs in nine, who are looking better defensively. So if you are bringing him in, you're hoping for a shock result against Liverpool and then points in that. Because I don't think it's gonna happen for them from after that. But it's just nice seeing him play with a bit of swagger
totally.
And a bit of
totally.
You know, smile on his face and beating players and, you know, looks fit and sharp and ready to go. Quite highly owned now, 21%. Mm. Not a player that I'm looking at really like to bring in, but yeah, I think in game week six, we'll have a jealous eye over him. And if you are free hitting in that week, he's going to be an easy pick.
Yeah, three home games from 6 to 9 with West Ham, Palace and Spurs all at home. Okay, it's Man City away in 8, but yeah, they do look like three quite nice home games, don't they? So I will give him more than just a cursory glance on the wild card, I think.
Yep, we've been giving quite a few cursory glances to other players because there's loads of other football taking place this week. Mm. We've got League Cup, we've got European games come in as well. So as always, we urge you to save those transfers if you can and make sure you get as much information as you're able to get.
Absolutely right. And Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday with a look ahead to game week 5 and whether they're planning to play any chips ahead of game week 5.
And if you haven't already, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Lee, absolute pleasure as always, and good luck to you in game week 5.
Good to see you, Az. Good luck in 5.